Hey, this is Gary Berger. Hello, Debbie. Good
Hi,
morning.
Gary. It's good to see you. It's been a little bit.
Yeah, it has been. This is Lawyer versus Lawyer, our podcast. How are you ready for summer?
I'm in the middle of summer because it is hot to this week.
It is hot. It is
Yeah,
hot.
but there are a lot of hot things going on.
Yes, there is. Speaking of a business that is hot and crushing, would you introduce our guest today,
I would
please?
indeed. I'm going to introduce her twice because I knew her and have known her for years as Jennifer Matthew. And so most of our listeners will probably know who we're talking about if we call her Jennifer Matthew. But she now is a newlywed, and it's Jennifer Crompton, and who with the company formerly known as a number of different names, but we will now refer to as Lexitas.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome, welcome. We're excited to have you here.
Thank you so much.
Good. Well, tell us about the history of your company so I won't miss one of the Midwest. I know if I start with Midwest, I'll leave somebody out at the beginning of the company.
So my memory starts with Midwest litigation. So I'll
Yeah.
start with that. So Debbie Weaver bought the company and started it with her friend Kelly Willis over 30 years ago. Gosh, I should know this, but yeah, over 30 years ago. And Kelly unfortunately had breast cancer and passed away. So Debbie kind of was forced in a position to take over the whole company. And she's done a fantastic job with that. So Midwest litigation was basically court reporting, is my understanding. Then they started a trial division at some point along the way, and about 11 years ago started an ADR program. And so it has had many iterations, as you mentioned. And so then we rebranded to Alaris, gosh, probably 5 years ago, I'll
Yeah,
say,
at
four or five,
least.
yeah. And then the ADR division was always known as Equitas, which was run by Lisa Herder, which I'm sure many of the listeners are aware of Lisa. And when we rebranded to Lexitas, we decided to just go with everyone, Alaris to Lexitas, excuse me. Now we are all under one umbrella, which occurred April 1st of last year. It's kind of a joke that it's April Fool's Day.
Oh, that's
We were
funny.
purchased and took over, so.
So they took over your mediations portions, your court reporter portions, your videography. What else do you all do?
So Lexitas does lots of things.
Like
I
what?
am no expert, so
Okay.
but records, the records division is really large, so I don't know who you use for to order your records, but I know that's a really popular one. And they have a sort of a different divisions for plaintiff side and defense side, is my understanding. And then they have physical office space all over the country, based out of Texas though, based out of Houston. And then I think the court reporting side is probably the next biggest. They have, like I said, records. They do some work with I don't know if it's like archives or like retrieval, like document retrieval, not just records in that way. But I'd have to go on the website and tell you everything they do. But the biggest portion for me that's exciting is they did not have an ADR division at all. So we are
Right.
the only one still for now.
That's great. So
Yeah.
are you going to be expanding that, hopefully?
Yes. I
Great.
can't elaborate on that too much, but
That's okay, but
yes.
that's a good thing. So we're to look for even more growth.
That's absolutely right. So
One of the
you've heard
things
of this
that
company.
Oh, I use them. I use them. They're great. They're great. You know, Adam and I are friends. He runs various parts of the business, and I've seen Jennifer over the years. It's a great story about the ascendancy of a company. Just hardworking people, Debbie and the people there. You just build on it. You add it. You add it. You scale it. You scale it. Then you go national, and then they've kind of merged with this other company to, because that's the direction of some of these, kind of the market forces forcing you there. The days of having what going around with your own court reporter or having this guy that you know mediates cases
That's
or that
right.
kind of stuff, those days are gone. Court reporters are hard to get, all this stuff. So good for you guys. Jennifer, great for your company to roll with the punches and scale and do those things. I think, you know, law firms try to do that too. We all try to do that in a business, but it's good
Yeah.
to see someone succeed in that.
I think that's why they've been so successful. I mean, not only does Debbie and Jennifer and everybody really over there focuses on customer service, but it has run much more like a business than law firms are. And the reason for that is we're busy practicing law. We don't have the time or maybe ability to run a business the way we probably should in many of our cases. Best point is me. I'm terrible at business. Luckily, I have partners who aren't.
We do it all the time. Lawyers talk about it all the time. Because your trial lawyer hat,
Yep.
you got your operations, you run a business hat, and you run your marketing hat.
Right.
And it's hard to do three jobs. I have three jobs at
Right.
any one time, and
Right.
all lawyers do. Jennifer, your husband Seth does that. We know other people. Although I will say, let me give a plug for Adam, who is also a really good scuba diver. He and I dive in Bonterre, Missouri. We're on staff there. We're dive leaders. He wears a wetsuit all the time. I'm in a dry suit. He's a good diver. It's been fun to dive with him over there.
Okay, we don't know what the difference that. We don't know what that.
Yeah, I don't know what that means either.
When you just have a bunch of neoprene on you, you look like a black, a seal. Just a wetsuit. A dry suit is it's a fabric. And inside my suit is air. There's no water permeating.
Oh, interesting.
So in a wetsuit, it gets an extra coat on you, and it keeps you warm, but the water goes through all the time, and you just conserve your warmth. In a dry suit, you're dry. Although I call them moist suits, because they're never really dry. I'm always a little bit wet.
It's skins.
It's a way to do cold water diving.
Okay.
And it's cold there.
See, he's taught us something.
Nice.
And Adam tells me to listen to this podcast. So, but here's can I ask you
we'll
question?
We'll have to quiz him about that afterwards, see if he's being honest.
This is a typical Lawyer v. Lawyer podcast where Debbie and I talk all the time and our guest doesn't. Jennifer, can I ask a question?
Yeah,
because I'm talking a lot
I want
right
you
now.
To also ask her about her background, because you may be surprised.
Oh, well, here's my question is, how did Alaris, Equitas, how did it scale? What do you think was the success in allowing your company to scale and expand?
It's a great question. I think it's multiple things. I think at the base level, the organic growth that we've experienced year over year, I've been with the company, it'll be 5 years in November, so almost 5 years. I can just speaking about ADR, that's my focus. Just growth year over year. Year to date is always looking good, which is great. And I think a lot of that is just organic. It's relationships. And you all know Debbie, you know me, we're relationship people. It's about knowing your clients, knowing what they want and expect, and they continue to come back. But obviously with growth, there has to be more people coming forward, either more from your firm, for example, Debbie, or we have to have new clients come to us. And so that has been a big push. But to your other part of your question, I think because we were acquired, I have a better understanding of mergers and acquisitions. I never have been through anything like that before. And so I think we were acquired, which is different, obviously, than merging, and we continue to acquire. I say we, meaning all of Lexitas. So that growth is a natural growth. I think the number is in 24 months, over the course of 2 years, Lexitas acquired 21 companies.
Wow.
Imagine that.
Wow.
So that's huge. But they've been able to scale it because they have the infrastructure in place in the major places, which really accounting, right? The C-suite, obviously, and then accounting is a huge one, and being able to handle that, to bring in all those people and companies. And I will say, from my understanding, I'm not in these meetings, but our office is much larger than some of them. So you might be talking 5 to 10 employees. We are like 60. So we were a big acquisition.
When you talk, how do you... You talk about organic and relationships, and I understand the merger, but just focus on that. Like for a lawyer who's listening to this, how do you train and systematize relationship building among your staff so that you do this? How do you do that?
I believe it's an art form, and you hit it on it earlier, Debbie, about customer service. So when I'm looking to hire someone new, for instance, do I necessarily care if they worked for a law firm? No, they work for the courts, not necessarily. Do they have customer service in their background? Do they understand what that means? Do they have a fundamental understanding? Do they like it? Do they like people? Those are the kind of things that I'm looking for. So I think we have great people at our office. I mean, hands down, bar none, we have great people. People have come, people have gone. You know how that goes, especially through the acquisition. But it's a training thing, and it's also just that focus on the core, which is customer service. And I personally do not think that means... I'm probably getting in trouble for saying this, but the customer is always right. I don't think that's always the case, but we try not to say no. We try to figure out a workaround or a way to say yes.
Right.
And lawyers are very demanding, in case you all didn't know that.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about with your background. Tell us about your history.
Oh, where I've worked?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
just the fact that you went to law school.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of people don't know that about you.
That's true. Yeah. And I get asked that sometimes. They're like, you're a lawyer? I'm like, oh, well, yes, I am. So I came here to St. Louis in 2001, straight from undergrad, that bright-eyed 21-year-old. Went to SLU Law School and really didn't know what I wanted to do. But I loved trial ad, like loved it. Tom Stewart was actually one of my adjunct professors who I get to work with all the time now. And so anyway, I just thought, gosh, I really want to be in the courtroom. But my first job was with a bankruptcy firm. And actually we were in this building for a short time before I quit. Many years ago. And I didn't really love it. And so I left there and I went to the prosecutor's office in St. Louis City. So I was an assistant circuit attorney for just over 11 years. I was there a very long time. Yeah.
That's a long time.
I was, yeah. I sort of became a dinosaur at one point. You know, people tell you, if you don't leave, you're always going to be here. Yeah. So, but I did everything.
You showed them.
Well, yeah, I did everything in that office except for white collar crime. That's the only division I was never in. So
you're in there trying cases, working these things up.
All the time. I loved it. Wow. 2013 and 14 were my busiest years. I was trying to think about that the other day. But yeah, I tried like 10 cases one year and maybe 9 the next or something. I was in sex crimes and child abuse. And so those cases frequently go to trial.
That's hard. What a hard job.
It was the best, though.
That's great. Good for you. Good for you. And then you, I want to talk about two pivots. I want to talk about tell me about your pivot to Equitas.
Yes.
And then tell me about your pivot, your company's pivot, and how you guys handled COVID.
Sure. So I left.
Is that okay, Debbie?
It sounds good.
All right.
I'm tickled at the way he pronounced Equitas. You know, we've learned today earlier, Gary is very good with languages.
Gracias.
De nada.
Grazie. Prego.
Grazie.
So actually, I left the circuit attorney's office and I went to work for Gretchen Myers for a little over a year. So I did some plaintiff's personal injury work. And while I was there, Debbie Weaver, I'd known Debbie because everyone knows Debbie, she approached me and said, hey, Lisa's thinking about retiring. What do you think about coming over here? And I said, to do what? So obviously the rest is history. I made that decision, very personal decision, to go into a totally different role, not trying cases, not really having clients in that sense anymore. So
how do you like that decision now that you've been there for 5 years?
You know, it was a great decision. I mean, I could have left, right? I think it was a great decision. I immediately, just my personality, went to mediation training, like right away, to become a mediator. Because I was like, I need to understand, what is this like? What you know, the science behind it, and negotiation, and theory, and all these things. Because when you're a trial lawyer, you're like, I try cases. I pound my fist on the table. I thought of it sort of as a weak area of the law. And I know that sounds really weird saying it now, but I did. And after that training, I was like, oh, wow, I get this. The people are really good at it. And it's really important. We can't try everything, right? Especially going from criminal to civil, 1% of cases are tried, maybe. So that was my pivot to the company. And I had Lisa for a couple months. So.
Was that a different way to think, to change your way of thinking? Is that the major change? Because it really is different
it is.
To be a judge or a mediator, to put that neutral hat on.
So when you go to mediation training, have you ever been to the mediation training?
I have not.
Okay. So, you know, you do little exercises. So like the three of us are here. You're the plaintiff. You're the defense. Oh, I just flipped you guys. But okay. You're plaintiff. You're defense. And I'm the mediator. So I sit here and I'm Switzerland. And I don't care about the outcome. I care about you getting to the right outcome for you. And that was really hard for me. Like I'm sitting in training going, well, of course I care. Of course I want. She deserves more money, you know, but you can't. That's not how you
That's
can think.
Tough.
It was really, I remember distinctly, I talked to Joan Schwartz about it afterwards because, you know, Joan's a mediator and she kind of laughed at me. She's like, oh, hon, you'll figure it out. But it is hard to not have that
That's
client.
Joan right
That's
there.
Just like her.
So, but yeah, I mean, you just, you don't have a client. You don't have an interest in the outcome other than getting to one. So it's really interesting.
That is interesting. That I've always said I would be a terrible mediator because I'm too much of an advocate. I don't know that I could set it aside. So that's good.
You absolutely could, Debbie. I'm going on record right now. You'd be a fantastic mediator.
I don't know about that.
I do.
So why is there... Tell us about generally the stats in mediation. How has it grown and why is it necessary for our
future? Do you want me to answer about pivoting first to COVID or just talk
about
We'll
come back to that.
Okay.
I'll get you on COVID.
Kind of, if I ask kind of a mediocre question, she kind of blows me off.
Okay. I didn't read that.
No, it's all good. It's all good. Some of my questions just don't get answered. That's okay,
no,
they though.
They do.
It's all good.
I have it written down. See here.
It's all good. Go ahead and answer Debbie's question.
Sorry, I need to read the room better.
See, she wanted to answer my question. So.
No. I'm happy to answer Debbie. So you're talking just metrics in general. Is that what you want?
Yeah. Like, why is there so much more mediation now than there used to be?
Well, I think, I don't know that there's more, and that's sort of difficult for me because we have more competition in town. You probably know that, right? More people. We used to be sort of flyover country. I think they just thought, the Midwest, we'll leave them alone. And I don't think that's true anymore. So I think there's more competition. There's more mediators, perhaps. Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's just sort of my 2 cents.
Seems like it.
Yeah. I think a lot of people want to give it a try, or it's like a good, you know, sail into the sunset type career move, which is great, you know, and I love talking to people about that. But I, like I said, personally, I've seen year over year, month over month, we've experienced growth. So has it become more accepted? I don't know. I think COVID definitely played a huge part in that. as far as we, you know, everybody kind of, it fell off for a few months, and then we all had to bounce back and figure out how we're going to settle these cases, how we're going to make money. We got to move these cases along, and the courts are essentially closed, you know, at that time. So
that was scary.
It was very scary.
So you mentioned, let's get back to Gary's pivot question.
No, she's got, she started to answer it. See, she segued it.
She's trying really hard.
She's trying to answer my
question. So you mentioned early on that your Lexitas in the last 2 years bought 20 plus companies or acquired 20 plus companies.
True.
During COVID?
During COVID. We were one of them. Yes.
So clearly that they've done well during COVID. What about your day-to-day activities? Now let's talk about Gary's thing. You know, this pivoting stuff. What did you guys do to pivot during COVID? And I guess, well, I guess let's just establish this. You are, at the bottom line, a vendor for attorneys. Attorneys mostly shut down their offices during COVID. So what happened to you guys?
Yes, so we are a vendor, that's true, and our clients are all lawyers and law firms for the most part.
Yeah.
And so right when, you know, March, whatever that terrible day was, 2020, it hit us instantly because we also invite people. You all have indoor offices. They're very nice. We have, currently we have 7 of them, physical space. People come all the time for various reasons, and that just stopped. It was like, halt, you know. So for ADR.
But the rent payments didn't.
That's right.
They sure didn't.
Sorry I interrupted. Please
go,
Jennifer.
No, you're absolutely correct. That was a...
That's the rub, right?
That's the rub. And so all of our overhead still existed. So we had to downsize our staff. I personally took a pay cut, and so did a lot of people. I ran the ADR division by myself for months. I didn't have any staff, which I'm not complaining, but it was scary, you know, from my like kitchen table for a while till I had like a proper office
set up.
That is crazy. While trying to teach my kids, you know, in their bedrooms with their, you know, desk set up, and it was a mess for a lot of us, right? But we were able to figure out what to do with really strong leadership. I genuinely mean that. This is before Lexitas was even in sight. So we had our owner Debbie, our president Nancy, and then, you know, the rest of the, we call them key exec staff at the time. And we just met constantly and tried to figure out what do we do? How do we survive, you know, like a lot of other people? And then beyond that, thrive, right? Because our plans for the year were out the window first quarter.
Right, right.
Q1
right.
was a mess, yeah. But so what I did personally is I immediately taught myself Zoom because I'd never really used it before, maybe a few times, but not really. Read, you know, watched all these tutorials. I love Zoom personally. I know not everyone does. But I figured out, how can we do this? We can make these breakout rooms. I can teach these mediators and arbitrators like how to do this.
Were you just about to say old crusty mediators who don't know technology? Is
that what I was not.
I didn't think so. Sorry, go ahead.
I don't use those words, old crusty. No, but it's difficult, right? It's difficult to teach anyone something
it
that they're not
hard,
comfortable
but
with.
It's time.
Hard for everybody.
This was not a hard teach, really.
Did you use Zoom before the pandemic?
No, but I was teaching trial advocacy at the time, and I didn't realize what everybody else was doing, so I thought I have to come up with a way for them to try the case. So that's what we did. We immediately transferred to Zoom. I learned Zoom, and I later found out my group was the only group that tried a case. Everybody else was like, never mind, giving it up. But we tried our dang case.
Good
I'll
for
tell you.
You
that much. So it was interesting.
So you had to do it. You're like a bit like every other law firm. I had to learn it. I did a Supreme Court argument in April of 2020. And my most in that class action case.
Yeah.
And in my most my smartest question I asked the panel was, it's on the transcript, saying, I can't see my clock.
It was one of the
camera things. They have a camera on a clock, and I was trying to scroll through, and I can't find them. Like, and so I'm asking Justice Draper. He's like, you have 8 minutes. I go, okay, great. And I kind of just estimated, and he cut me. It was, but the court was figuring it out too.
Yeah,
you're
of course
figuring
they were.
Out
and now a month later.
Was
we're a month later.
But, yeah,
that's
but,
incredible. By the way, that you did that.
And then I ended up. I'm going to talk about you though. I end up loving Zoom for depots. And I have a lot of techniques and tricks I do that we did an episode on this already, I think.
Yeah.
But what was it like? I don't want to ignore, you know, just us and I. But Jennifer, for what was it like? I mean, you have to. It's change or die. You're changing. You're going to Zoom. How do you push that out to all of your clients and teach the clients and say you can still mediate and here's how we're going to do it by Zoom and this is what a breakout meeting is and how is mediation going to work in Zoom because it is a personal thing. Can you speak on those issues a little bit?
Absolutely. I think I can separate them in sort of two categories, as would be our independent contractors, the mediators themselves and arbitrators, and then the clients. I personally think, I'm not tooting my own horn, but like my powers of persuasion some days came in handy, sort of talking people into it. And I don't mean in a bad way, in a good way, like explaining to them the benefits of it. I literally wrote a blog on it. I had my notes there. I had emails that were like, I don't know, a whole screen long of why we're good. Please use us. Zoom bombing is for dummies. You know, like don't put your needing information on the internet. Of course, people are going to jump in your meeting.
Plus, the moderator can always kick them out. I've removed a lot of people from Zoom.
I don't have it with me because that was years ago. But like, you know, I just had all these things that I had done to make sure we disabled the recording function, for instance. That's a big deal. None of our ADR to this day have that ability. Nobody can record. I can't even do it. I have to go back in my settings and I wouldn't do that. So that kind of thing. I think people were really nervous. And so speaking about the mediators and arbitrators, that's just really uncomfortable for them. They're people person, you know, you and people, persons, you know, we're sitting a foot apart. Like it's eye contact, it's body language, it's getting to know you. Brendan Ryan was the king of that. You know what I mean? Like you can't do that on Zoom as well. Understood. But it doesn't mean you can't do it. You can't get there.
He's great. You go into mediation, he tells war stories, and then he asks you for a number and then walks out.
And then
sorry,
gets it settled.
Go ahead, Jennifer. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, like, it was really difficult. And I will say our mediators and arbitrators, they're business people at their core. And they realized, and I'm speaking for them, but that you have to do this. You have to adapt. Or you're not going to see anybody in person for a long time.
So you moved, you had to deal with that inertia, and you're moving people to a new model and a totally new way
yes.
of doing it.
We did a full-blown training. I don't remember how many of them.
A lot of them, didn't you?
Well, so then to my other side, the clients and the lawyers and lay people, I offered demo upon demo upon demo. And I'd even have, okay, you two are representing your people. You have your insurance people. You have your clients. We're all in the same meeting together. No one's speaking to each other. I'm just doing the demo for the mediation on Friday. And just showing them how to do it. Is your volume okay? We can see you. Please don't be driving in your car. That ceiling fan's annoying. This is where the mute button is. You know, I mean, it'd be on and on and on, right? So that I did, I don't know how many of those, countless, just to get people at least comfortable. And then if they couldn't, our office, I should mention this too, our office was open the whole time. It was physically open.
Was it really?
It was. We didn't have anybody there, but we were doing like deep cleaning, you know, all the whole nine. And so people, let's say your client, it lives in, I'll make this up, lives in Eureka and has really bad cell service.
Right. They got to go somewhere and you would set that up and offer that. That's really valuable.
Anywhere. Yeah. Anywhere
I can't tell you how many. I made a rule for depots, mediation or depots. When we do the prep, we have to do the prep on Zoom. We're not allowed to do it on phone. You can't go to their house because you're testing the connectivity there.
Oh, good point.
And we can't have the person driving in their car. Or we had Genevieve from my office deposed a guy who was drinking a beer on Zoom, the defendant.
No.
Yeah. Like, well, that's it's hysterical. So we all have these stories on people failing at Zoom, which can be funny now in 2022.
But
it wasn't funny 2 years ago. Do you still have the emotions or stress about having to do that stuff? I do. I think of all the things I did in the training and my staff and getting everybody a laptop and two monitors and then having one of my people, I got the two laptops, but they're sitting in a box over here. You got to put them up too. Well, I don't have a desk, so I bought her a desk. And so, you know, just these little things. And I know that was a little bit of a speech, but that really is the question about you still have PTSD from that.
To that point, though, we were well equipped because we have a technology section. Right?
Yeah, so, tell me about that.
Gene Miller and his team, we all had laptops. We all were equipped to work from home. We just didn't do it. You know, I mean, we could. I could work from home, but I didn't until, you know, literally D-Day. And then I was like, you're home. But no, some people had to have laptops. I had an extra monitor delivered, things like that. But we were ready, other than like the desk and the chair. I literally took my chair from my office to my home because I loved
it.
Yeah, it's red. I was like, oh, this is a cute chair. I'm going to take it home. So it's still there, actually. I just got a different chair at the office. We were well equipped. And so that was actually a huge benefit. And then the people within our office understood it better than we did. So they could at least get us there, you know?
Right.
But we were ready. I mean, that was the great thing.
So you weren't stressed. You still don't carry that stress with you. You felt pretty good on the pivot.
I did, except for the part where I was the only person in like our department and we had to really downsize. That I felt terrible about, yes. But when the work came back, yes, we're better. But
that's scary.
It's
so
very
the lessons
scary.
Learned. Lessons learned by that big, what we would call disruptor. You said adapt a lot of times.
Yeah.
So adaptation. Proactivity. What else?
Did I say it a lot? Sorry, that's probably
a no. I just thought that's a really good word. That's a really good word. I mean, that's what we all learned, isn't
right?
it?
Well, and I think so. Something that we focus on is being proactive. I'm constantly reading and trying to do better, right? Aren't we all trying to just be forward thinking? And that one, no, I didn't see coming. And so the adaptation, the pivot, was huge,
right?
And a lot of those, and you guys probably agree with this. Like you continue to use those skills that we learned during that time, and you knew who your maybe more solid employees were, or who's more reliable, or who can handle stress, or who absolutely can't. You know,
showed a lot.
Who can't work from home? They need to come in the office because they're not productive. You know, that kind of stuff. And the workforce is totally different now.
Totally different.
Totally. Now. So that's been a huge
stressor. Yeah, what we ought to be talking about is 2020 workforce and how to pivot from that.
Well, we'll do that on a future
that
podcast.
Sounds good.
You know, you mentioned that before. Or about 15 minutes ago, you talked about figuring out workarounds. And to me, that's a very, I don't want to say just a lawyer because people do that in business, but that's what we do as trial lawyers. What you did as a prosecutor or working for Gretchen, and you know, you get stymied. You can't put the document in one way. You got to figure out another way to get it in. There's no, you know, and I always explain this to my clients. I say, you know, we're going to have a lot of hurdles to jump through as a prosecutor or a plaintiff or even as a defendant. You just got to keep either go around them, through them, figure out another way. Don't let that stuff set you back. So the good for you guys and your company for doing
that. Yeah.
Thank you. One other thing I was going to say, too, is about numbers-wise, 75 to 80 is where our number fluctuates. Percentage of our cases involve a Zoom component. So it's really high.
Still. Wow.
I love it. I love Zoom depots. I love it.
And I'm just talking about mediation arbitration.
Just
so,
mediation. Yeah. So the mediators
depots
will do.
Probably just as high, though, maybe a little lower. But yeah.
So we're kind of out of time, what is your takeaway from all these things we did differently to run our businesses with the pandemic? What's going to stay with us in terms of how your company runs? And I think maybe that I just thought of that question because of what you just said.
Actually, Debbie passed me a note and asked it earlier, but no, I'm just kidding.
Go ahead, Debbie. Would you ask my question, Debbie?
I like Gary's question.
Oh, thank you. I got approved. That well, thank God.
Couldn't help it. No, I think everything is different, and I know the workforce is probably seriously is another podcast, but that has been a big lesson learned for us is how can we keep our workers, keep them happy, keep our clients happy while also doing this basically virtual world, you know, and figuring out where people need to be and what they want and what they're looking for. And I'm being vague sort of intentionally, but you know, every client's a little bit different. We deal with a lot of confidential things, you know, high profile things we need to keep close to the vest, if you will. Like the NFL matter was handled in our office, for instance. I don't know if you guys do that, but special master was Judge David, who's on our staff, and then or on our panel, excuse me, and then we handled all the depositions.
I heard about that.
Yeah, and so a lot of them were in person, a lot of them weren't. And there were people all over the place, right? And so we just had to figure out how to do that, how to make that work for everybody. And the technology has got to be on point, because there's no patience, right, for something to fail.
Right.
Especially not something, you know, whether it's that or a simple, you know, two-person deposition. But I think for us, we've just figured out as best we can what our clients want, what they expect, and we constantly try to give it to them within reason. And again, I think the staffing thing is tricky too. I keep saying that, but I just hired a temp for the first time 3 weeks ago. So she's working right now because I couldn't find someone, you know, that made sense for us to come in.
I want to ask the same question to Debbie, and then Jennifer, could we ask you to come back for another episode to talk about some other things too?
Absolutely.
Debbie, can I ask the same question of you? From what you're doing differently from the pandemic, what's staying now? What's staying in your practice?
More Zoom meetings, particularly with clients. And, you know, I have two levels of clients. I have the local clients, which are assigned to me to defend, and those are my real clients. But then I also have companies that will pay us to defend those people, insurance companies or businesses who were sued and their employees were sued. And so with the local clients, nobody wants to take off work to come in and see their lawyer. Nobody wants to do that. That will stay. It's just much easier. If I'm going to do a will and trust, which, you know, I do some of that, I will get those people on the phone, you know, on Zoom, and I will talk to them about what they want. Then I email
them.
You
do wills and trust?
Yes, I know. I don't tell anybody because I could do it all week.
You're amazing.
I can't turn it away. I get too many of those cases.
Stuff. It's okay to say no.
I know, but I like to do it because I want to keep up on what's new.
I get it.
I just get too much of it. I have to turn a lot of it away so I don't tell people.
Thank you. And did I interrupt you?
No, that's the biggie.
I'm on the Board of Legal Services, and we're doing a CLE for estate planning in June to launch a planned giving program that I'm chairing through Legal Services to help. And we have 240 people signed up for a CLE on June 30, the last day, right?
Funny.
And it's the most people they've ever had for a legal services CLE. It's going to be great, and it's because of Zoom.
Yeah.
Can I answer my own question before we sign off?
So let me ask you, Gary.
Do you have any good questions for me, Debbie?
I do. My question, or Jennifer might even want to ask this, what have you learned through the pandemic? What will you carry into the future?
Zoom depots. Perfect. So I agree on mediation. I love it. It works. I agree on everything you guys said. But for me, on the plane of sight, I love depots by Zoom. I did it last Thursday, all day corporate rep depots and people depots in a house explosion case. I don't want to go into details, but if you're a witness and you're looking at a screen, seeing your own face, and the lawyer is putting up documents and highlighters, isn't it true that da 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 da? There is something about the ability in a room like this where we are. People can dissemble, a lawyer can nudge them, your lawyer, but there's something about getting good admissions in depots that I could do it before, but boy, I'm just getting people to admit stuff. It's great. And it's so I think it's really effective. People looking
That's
at themselves
great.
On a screen, seeing it. I think it cuts through the bullshit a little bit sometimes. I don't know.
Well, maybe the ease of scheduling, too. We find that, right? Like, if you're a police officer, I make this up, in Kansas City, you don't have to travel. He doesn't have
right.
to travel.
No, it's an
all-day
thing.
You can literally just figure it out, and you can stay where you are. Yeah.
Well, hey, Jennifer, thanks so much for being on our podcast. Jennifer Crompton is with Lexitas and runs the ADR unit. Thanks so much for being with us. Let's do this again.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to Lawyer v. Lawyer. Thanks, Gary.